Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Larson, Bob Weber, Dustin Pindell, and we've got a special guest, Dr. Fred Gingrich. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So we're happy to have Dr. Gingrich with us today, and we've got a great show lined up as we're going to talk through several things about the American Association of Bovine Practitioners and some of the things that they learned. They just did a virtual conference on the fly, so learned a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about some of the big issues, and Dr. Gingrich is the executive director of AABP, which is American Association of Bovine Practitioners. I'm going to ask him a little about that organization, but also ask him what are some of his opinions on what are some of the big things that we see coming in the cattle industry. And then we'll talk some about sustainability in practice. As always, if you have questions, comments, things you'd like us to address on the podcast, you can send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. So before we get started, one thing I did want to tell you guys that I learned last night, you probably already would have suspected, I'm not capable of being in charge when my wife is working and getting the dinner prepared. So she prepared the dinner beforehand, but apparently our dog has a pretty good reach on the counter. And so we lost about half the casserole, but after it was baked, it was fine. You guys have never had that, I'm sure.
Oh no. But yeah, it's amazing how well a dog can identify where potential food is, even if they're supposedly, according to the daughter, knows better than that. So it can't be her fault that anything happened.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I learned a new phrase. It's counter surfing. So that's apparently what this dog does, is counter surfs. So if, Fred, it's great to have you with us. And AABP and BCI have worked together on several projects. We do a lot of the recordings for the AABP meetings. So for practitioners that are a member, those are on the AABP site and the BCI site. But recently, you started a podcast that's been, I think, pretty popular called Have You Heard? That's available on different podcasting sites, and it really focuses on a lot of different topics. I mean, you've covered everything from cattle health to BVD to lameness, looking at different procedures that you can do to cattle. So that's been a fun, I think you've kind of enjoyed jumping into that podcast world.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We've gotten a lot of good member feedback. And wide variety of topics that are applicable to veterinarians and producers. Even had a physical therapist on there talking about, how to save your shoulder or how to drive properly. One of my favorites was I interviewed Dr. Sean Baker, who's an MD, and he's a great advocate for the beef industry because he's on a carnivore diet. He only eats meat for the past 5 years. So that was an interesting one, too.
Yeah, and those are available on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you get your podcasts, and it's called Have You Heard, but Heard is spelled H-E-R-D. So yeah, you've had some great guests on there. Tell us a little bit about you and AABP, Fred.
Yeah, sure. So appreciate the opportunity. I'm a regular listener of Cattle Chat. I enjoy listening to your podcast as well. And so AABP, we have about 5,000 veterinarians and veterinary students, primarily in North America, but we are in about 30 international countries as well. And our mission is really to support continuing education for our members. That's our major mission. Another thing we do is advocacy. So we routinely work with regulatory agencies like FDA, USDA, state legislative agencies, and then also our allied organizations like the Academy of Veterinary Consultants, AVMA, NCBA, National Milk. And then our last big bucket that we do is we provide support of our AABP Foundation, which funds scholarships, education grants, externship grants, as well as clinical research grants, which are directly applicable to cattle practice.
And so as part of that continuing education mission, you guys have some conferences.
Yeah, we've had, now we've had 53 annual conferences. They're almost always held the third week of September. And then for the past 3 years and coming up here in February 2021, we have a recent grad conference, which is for veterinary members who are 8 years or less out of school.
Weber, you've had some involvement with some of those conferences that focus on newer graduates. What's your experience with those?
Yeah, so I work, as you know, closely with Beef Improvement Federation, and a number of years ago, we implemented a young producer symposium to really focus on helping build the not only network of those young producers with maybe some mentors that are seasoned seed stock or leading producers, but also sort of augment their business management capability. And the programming for that part of the conference is in a lot different than the main general sessions of that meeting. And so it's I think a great opportunity for folks to get really focused on skill set development, and as an organization, it helps highlight it really in the program too, right? So they have a key spot, and we encourage our board of directors to go and be engaged with those folks and really make them feel connected to BIF, because at the end of the meeting, if you haven't met 10 new people, you've not been paying attention, right? So
and yeah, that, Fred, is your programming for that different than the regular annual conference, or is it just the annual conference, exact same programming, different audience?
It's definitely different. So we have, it's more of a focus on the introductory veterinary skill sets. We have, if you look at our demographics, although it's open to the 8 years out of school, each year, about 65% of attendees graduated 9 months to 3 years ago. So really, it's a really recent grad conference. And we have offered tracks in introductory consulting skills. We've offered some business management tracks, but the other thing that's become very popular is we offer a clinical skills track. And I remember Walt Guterbach, who's an honor roll AABP member, was sitting in the audience listening to Dr. Mark Hilton give an OB tips talk, and Walt's in his 70s, and he told me, man, I learned some really good tips. We ought to put a clinical skills track in the annual conference. So for the past 2 years, one of the most popular sessions at the AABP annual conference is a clinical skills, and we often talk about veterinarians needing production-based skills, but that demonstrates that veterinarians still want those individual animal skills for doing very particular procedures or teaching them. So I think that's been a really interesting metamorphosis of how the recent grad conference has now influenced our annual conference.
And there's no one way to do most mm-hmm. procedures. So it's mm-hmm. always interesting to look at how somebody else does it, and you can pick up something. Yeah, this makes sense, or this would work for me, or it wouldn't. So I think that absolutely. What about the conference this year? And let's think about the AABP conference this year. And I may just start out with, I know it was virtual. It was different than what you had expected. What did you learn from that kind of virtual format? And then I want to get into some of the topics.
Right. So, our board had planned, given the pandemic, we were unsure as to what we were going to do. And our board decided to have a hybrid conference. We were going to have an in-person component and then live stream the conference to virtual attendees. So we worked on that all through the summer. And then we were in Louisville. So unfortunately, due to the social unrest that happened there while we were there, we rotated and pivoted to just to an all virtual conference and didn't allow any attendees on site. There was about 15 of us there. And I think probably the one thing I learned is that I think we have the opportunity in the future to open up our conference to more than, the 1,000 to 2,000 people that usually come. We had 979 virtual attendees. So I think we can, although people still want to meet in person, the biggest feedback we got from the conference was we missed the networking. But allowing the opportunity for veterinarians that stay at home to take part in the conference is big. And I think the other thing that's important is that, a lot of rural practices are small, right? I mean, they don't have, many of them don't have 20, 30 veterinarians. And so oftentimes there's a rotation to come to AABP meetings or other national association meetings. And with this opportunity, they could send one person to the conference and then the other ones could, you know, virtual stream it while they're doing the work at home. So I think there's lots of opportunities in the future that we're learning from this pandemic to increase our reach with our continuing education.
Absolutely. And Dustin, I think earlier you made a comment about virtual versus in-person and the value of networking. And you're seeing some of that in your day-to-day work now or working with students. What do you think, virtual versus in-person?
Yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, we've had the virtual conferences in our professional, you know, the agriculture economic profession. Working with lots of graduate students, you know, I do a lot of Zoom meetings with them, and it's hard to really gauge. You know, sometimes you don't see their body language because, A, you don't see them, or you see just their head up. I've started making a habit now going back into the office one day a week. And that's when I try to line up all my schedules so I can meet with students face to face, because you are missing some of those things. I think some students just want to see, they want to be there. They want to be, you know, I mean, we still social distance. We still have our masks. We still follow the K-State guidelines. But I think as Fred mentioned, there's definitely an opportunity that you can visit with students. You know, we're visiting with, you know, we're doing prospective recruits right now. And a lot of times they would come to campus and we would give them the full tour for the domestic students. But I've never had an international student kind of come and learn and talk with faculty. And so one thing I think from an international perspective student, this is actually a great opportunity that we're learning how to do our visits, prospective visits with students internationally who would not be able to make it to campus. So I think that's one thing I've learned out of this, but there's still that face-to-face that students still need.
And the things you miss, and not just the, and so I agree with everything you said on the face-to-face, the things you miss with these virtual conferences, and Larson, I want to get your opinion, is the stuff that happens between the lecture sessions or the stuff that happens in the morning or the hallway or, and Weber hit on some of this, but it's that networking part of it. Is that, how important is that part, Bob?
Well, I think it's really important. I think one of the things we've learned by learning how to use technology for communication is there are times for a lot of relatively straightforward interactions. A phone call, a Zoom call work very well. Maybe a little less time on airplanes, a little less time getting together for some types of meetings. But I've actually gained a greater appreciation because we haven't been interacting. I haven't been interacting with colleagues from other parts of the country. I haven't been interacting in a face-to-face way. And I think I have even a greater appreciation because I don't particularly like to travel either. But I've gotten an appreciation of how important that is. And yes, we can deliver information in a lot of different ways, but that's not the whole reason I go to a meeting. It's to be challenged by other people. It's to have, you know, kind of deeper conversations than me sitting in a chair listening to an expert. It's when I talk to my peers and we disagree and, or we heard different things from the speakers and we can talk about it more, or we just interact and just talk like real human beings about our families and what else is going on. That part is an important part of any organization, any profession, whether it's veterinarians or beef producers or anyone, ag lenders. It's iron sharpens iron. We gain from being around other people that are in the same field. We challenge each other and we learn how to do a better job from the people around us.
Well, we've talked about that here at the vet school also, where you even the interaction after the lecture, after class, that you go to your neighbor and you go, he said this. Do you think that's right? Or he said this. I don't understand that. Or she said, do it this way. Have you ever tried that? I mean, that interaction cements kind of some of that learning. And Fred, yeah, speaking. Right. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
Oh, I was going to say, you're right. You're exactly right. And it's, you know, I think at least half of the learning occurs after the lecture or after the talk you went to. And it's exactly that. It's the integration of the new idea in and, you know, having a conversation with somebody about it, you know, debating pros and cons about the, you know, if it's a technical approach or whatever, really kind of helps cement that idea in your head and get it integrated and translated the right way. And sometimes I don't get it and somebody else says, well, look at it this way. And then, you know, ding, the light goes on. And so that's yep. The hall talk is a really important part of any meeting, I think.
So speaking of new ideas, what were some of the, so Fred, you watched the whole virtual session. I don't know how many screens you had going as you were watching this whole thing going on at the same time. What were some of the cool talks you saw, or what were some of the cool topics that came up?
Yeah, you know, and it's always a challenge. Our conference is, you know, planned by a program committee of volunteers, the content, you know, and it's always a challenge to identify new content, right? I always kind of tease people and I say in the room next door to my office, we have a library of 53 years of publications from AABP. And if you pull out the one from the first annual conference, the two major topics were bovine respiratory disease and mastitis.
Yeah.
And then you pull out the one from the 53rd conference and it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So the challenge is what's new in those things. And I think, and our virtual conference website is still up. So if you did register for the conference, you can still listen to those talks. But Dee Griffin, who many people know, did some really cool talks on using darts and BQA dilemma of using darts. I think that's a great discussion for veterinarians to have with their producers, as well as antimicrobial selection. Jason Tower did one on getting the most out of management intensive grazing. That was a really good talk, I thought. Very, very important topic for veterinarians to discuss with their producers. And then on the dairy side, Chris Chase, who many people know and is a very popular speaker at conferences, did a really cool talk on the microbiome and calf immunity. And so, you know, when we're talking about what's new, I think that, you know, the microbiome, genomics, and their effect on our industry is just, it's really amazing. Our research summaries are always really popular topics. And then when we're talking about BRD and what's new, so Matthew Scott won our grad student competition, and his talk was on transcriptomic profiling of BRD associated mortality and what that identifies. And if you think about
it, I don't know what that means, Fred.
Yeah, it was
you're
it
gonna
was,
have to help me here.
It was
I don't
was,
know what
you
trans
know, that genetic profiling, I'll refer to Bob on this, but you know, of those pathogens and what that reveals both in terms of data analysis and how we can prevent and treat disease in the future, is some really fascinating stuff. I listened to that talk twice. I'm not sure I really understand it yet. I just think it's really cool.
I'm just planning to use the word, Weber, you may have to help me because I'm planning to use the word transcriptomic. I can't say it. Transcriptomic
I
profiling
it.
Today.
I think I know what it means, but I might not pass the exam. So.
Well, you just have to say it confidently. If
that's
you,
exactly
if you,
right.
You get bonus
and put, like,
points
six
if
other
you could use that
words
phrase.
In with it and, yeah. Yeah.
So I think there have been some folks that have looked at the genetic profile of the pathogens, because we have pathogens and take Mannheimia, for example, a big pathogen in BRD. Not all Mannheimia are equal, and some of them are more or less pathogenic, and they're looking at some of the genetic profiles. I wanted to back you up too. The other one you talked about, Fred, microbiome and calf immunity. In a nutshell, can you, because that word also gets thrown around a lot, and I'm not sure everybody has a good walk-around definition. Not sure I do. What's your walk-around definition of what is the microbiome?
Well, I think it's all the good stuff that is in our guts that we're just still continuing to this day figuring out how it helps us or the animal, right? And I think... you know, I was in practice for 25 years, and, you know, when you give an antibiotic to an individual animal or a group of animals, we only think about what that does to the disease-causing pathogen. You know, are we, you know, we give a calf antibiotic X to treat disease Y, But that antibiotic also affects all of the other bacteria that are in that animal too, right? And so I think that is really where we're looking at stewardship is what is the effect of giving a calf an antibiotic as on its lifetime productivity or its lifetime immune status? That's pretty fascinating stuff.
Absolutely. And it is microbiome, as you think about, we all have bacteria, bugs, other things on our skin, in our gut. And just as you said, any modifications to that system can impact the outcome. And we've looked at that from a high level, so people are starting to explore that a little more closely. And I wanted to tie this in, Fred, and I think those are some really cool topics. But I'm going to shift gears just a little bit and talk about, as you look at the cattle industry, and I know AABP is involved with, and you mentioned Academy of Veterinary Consultants. Well, Bob Larson is actually the executive director for that organization. So I'm going to direct this at both of you guys. What do you see as some of the big industry upcoming issues, or what are some of the issues that you guys talk about when you talk to other folks in the industry?
Well, it's a combination of old and new. It's kind of like what Dr. Gingrich said. You know, some of the disease issues, some of the production issues, you know, good grazing management, good cattle health, those are the same that we've struggled with or had challenges my entire career, and I think we will for a very long time. So that's the old things, and those are things we need to continue to focus on, how to be productive. And it's because we're learning new things, and we've got new people entering the industry and entering the profession. So old is still good. Old topics, old concerns are still important. But then there are some new things, and one of the things that I think is how two things. One is really how food and how we interact with the people that consume food is changing. So consumers are more interested. There's a need for hearing from them and sometimes adapting our production practices to meet their needs, and also clearly communicating our production practices so people understand what we're doing. So old and new, and that kind of falls under, and you know, one of the buzzwords people throws around right now is sustainability, but it's really about, well, how do I stay in business as a veterinary practitioner, as a beef producer? How do I stay in business? And so that's things like, well, I need to be making a profit. I need to have a good business. I need to be building the soil. I need to be building the natural resources that I rely on. And I need to have customers who really appreciate what I'm doing. So that's kind of so old, we've got some of the same challenges. New, it's a new world. So that's what I see as far as really needs of both veterinarians and beef producers as we move forward.
Fred, what do you see from your perspective?
Yeah, you know, I agree completely, and I like how Bob used the word customer, and I think that it's very important for beef and dairy producers as well as veterinarians to understand that, you know, we're in the sales business. We're making a product that we want somebody to buy, and I think that the three big buckets that AABP deals with on a routine basis from a variety of perspectives is antimicrobial stewardship, cattle health and well-being, and environmental stewardship. And I think that we know that we're doing a really great job in all those areas, and we also know that there is always room for improvement. We should always be focused on continual improvement in every category of beef and dairy production. And so I think we can demonstrate that we are doing well, but we also cannot be afraid to say we can always do better. And I think that's from a national perspective as well as from an individual producer perspective. And I would challenge producers to ask their veterinarians, where can I do better in some of these areas? You know, the best thing a producer can do, I think, is to ask their veterinarian, what are the top three things I should be doing right now? And then I think the other thing that I always challenge myself in private practice was, what are the top three things I should quit doing? There's only so many hours in a day. If you're going to add things, you might need to take away some things, and it's okay to stop doing something that you used to do. And so I would challenge all of us to evaluate our business in that from that perspective.
Wow, that's a good, Fred, that's a good piece of wisdom. right? What should I stop? And that is a good challenge. If you think through your list of, and you could even look at your day's schedule and say, are there any of these things on here I should stop doing? Or maybe your week's schedule would be better. And now that we've got most of the podcast recorded, I don't have to worry about you nixing this off the list. But I think that's a, I think that's a good challenge, is what should I stop doing? And both, you know, you and I and Bob have been in practice at different points during our careers, and we've seen things evolve. But a lot of times, whether you're in practice or Weber, you're working on your ranch, it's the day-to-day stuff that drives our decision. The three topics you mentioned are not, I mean, they're sort of day-to-day, but the benefit or the payout is long-term, right? Antimicrobial stewardship, great example. How do you kind of balance some of those challenges with, should I treat this animal in this way, or how do I have a plan moving forward to make sure that I'm doing the right thing?
Yeah, and I think Fred hit on a really important point, and it's for the producers listening, figure out how to make your veterinarian part of your consultancy team and not just the, you know, ambulatory service, right? So, you know, veterinarian sees lots of different operations, lots of things going on that you likely as a producer probably don't have visibility at or to, you know, on neighboring operations or other businesses that are, you know, similar to yours. And that perspective can be a really valuable part of your management and get you elevated above the day-to-day, right? So, you know, it's easy to get locked into, you know, the $5 an hour work, but, you know, spending time and having conversations with somebody that's, you know, qualified to give you good advice at the $500 an hour level. I don't think your vet's going to cost that, but, you know, the expected return is, you know, this is a really valuable piece of our management plan and our management team, and being able to invest in that relationship and have those kind of dialogues for, you know, particularly full-time cow-calf producers, really important.
Well, it ties into what Larson said earlier, right? That you have those conversations that helps both cement what you're doing, but helps you think about the next step. And having somebody challenge the way you're doing things is good. And it's hard to sometimes force yourself to do that. So get somebody else out there. What about the animal welfare piece, Fred? Do you see anything specific there? So if you were talking to producers across the board and think beef producers, what are some of the big hurdles that we may have to come over? What do you think we should be doing big picture wise?
Well, I think, you know, from a welfare perspective, I think you have to take a very holistic approach to it, and look at your operation and how can you improve the welfare of your calves and cows. And, you know, I think individual topics, I think that we need to continue to address in the beef industry in particular is, you know, weaning. You know, how is that done on an individual operation? How can you improve? That's obviously the most stressful time of a calf's life. We can all agree with that. And so how can we improve that? Are we where we need to be? Castration. I think that's another big one. Talk to your veterinarian about how you can, you know, make that process less stressful or less painful for the calf. And then I think the other big one that maybe we sometimes don't think is a welfare topic, but, you know, we talked about the incidence of BRD and, you know, disease is not just a production issue. It's not just a morbidity and mortality issue. It's a welfare issue, right? So I think anytime we can decrease the incidence of disease, we're improving the welfare of the calf. So I think that holistic approach you know, just following up with what both Bob said is, you know, talk to your veterinarian and ask them, you know, they will welcome those questions and try to assist you in making improvements. Small improvements is still an improvement.
Yep, absolutely. And I think you're correct in saying if we focus on the disease or the prevention, that's how we get to the next steps. But also, I appreciate your comments on and weaning in particular, right? And we've had some discussions here in the past, but a lot of times we do weaning based on what we did last year, what we've done in the past. Reevaluate every year. Maybe it's the right way for your operation. Maybe it's the best way. Maybe there are other options. So we really appreciated you joining us today, Dr. Gingrich, and Thanks for your time. As always, if you've got questions, comments, or anything you'd like us to talk about on an upcoming episode, send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.